Chapter 14.
What plan?
I ventured, when the offbeat Afropunk continued to stare at Emma as if she was Flash Gordon, savior of the universe.
The plan to cripple the mainframe at the Quicken headquarters. This ornery one has been going on for a decade, it seems.
Mama B stood up on her sequined platforms so she could hip-check her cyber-lover.
What makes you so sure you'll be successful this go-around, husband?
Because we have her, Rig said, as he held out jazz hands toward Emma.
Me?
Emma said, and blinked her wide blue eyes down at herself as if she was searching for whatever it was that made her so special. She'll save every one of us, the Greek chorus chimed again in my mind. And it was no use. Now the Flash Gordon theme song was stuck in my head. But then Riggs' words finally set in.
Hang on, you don't have anyone yet until you explain this dubious-sounding Project Mayhem scheme you've got going on, I said, as I placed my half-bottle full of micro-brewed organic cider on the round coffee table.
Fair enough, my main man, fair enough, Riggs said, and then swiveled around in his wheelless Raleigh chair, pulled his dual keyboards closer to himself, and let his fingers fly. A hail of clickety-clacking sounded at a rapid staccato, and if there weren't repurposed egg cartons lining the metal walls of the shipping container, I imagined the echo would have sounded like a room full of secretaries on typewriters during the 1940s.
This is the Quicken Loans HQ, Riggs explained, and on the four mounted wall monitors above his desk were various CCTV camera angles of a large skyscraper in the heart of downtown Detroit, sporting a giant red QL at the top. Riggs clattered a few more keys, and each monitor displayed a different image. And then he turned around and stood as if he was a college economics professor about to launch into a lecture. Fuck, I hated econ. But I was determined to pay attention because I had a feeling shit was about to get real.
Okay, so I already explained how there are a lot of poor folk trying to re-enter society who can't afford to pay back taxes, right?
He asked, and I wasn't sure if this was rhetorical or not.
I remember,
Emma said, and nodded her head with a serious, studious expression, as if she was studying for the National Spelling Bee.
It's like they're punished for wanting to live the way they want. It makes me mad.
Hold on to that anger, little mama. It'll serve you well, Riggs said,
and tweaked the weird cyber steampunk goggles on his head until a regular set of bifocals dropped down on his wide nose.
Okay, the thing is, the CGA couldn't overlook the diehard green pieces that followed after President Gore spearheaded the charge before the scandal leaked out, and he was impeached.
Wait, President Gore as in Al Gore? Greenpeace? And what kind of scandal? You know what? I don't want to know.
He was a politician. Of course there was a scandal. I snatched the cider back up and downed the rest of the mild alcohol while I rued the fact that Kennedy wasn't around to offer me any of his home-stilled swill. I could go for that right about now, even if it did taste like turpentine.
Okay, continue.
As I was saying, the Greenpeace's forced the nation to go completely paperless, which meant every iota of record-keeping since the year 2002 has been digital. And from that point on, privacy became an illusion. But that's another topic, Riggs said, and lit another cigarette he magicked from his salt-and-pepper afro. All that to basically say, bloated corporations that can't rely on paper documents need a lot of data storage and processor speed. But there's only so much physical capacity to store a bank of servers of that magnitude, dig? Especially when you are a corporation surrounded by other massive corporations with the same storage needs.
Like weeds competing for resources such as soil and sunlight,
Acrasis said.
Bingo, Buttercup, Riggs said, and then picked up the remote thing he used to wire me spoof currency and pointed it at the image on the top left monitor.
What looked to be a 2D Google Map rendition of downtown suddenly enlarged itself. In one city block highlighted blue was a square with a drop pin marked Quicken Loans HQ, and it was flashing red.
Because of the way all of the conglomerates divvied everything up jurisdiction-wise, a legislation was passed stating a business could only hold records for as much as their government allotted database servers could hold, and no more. Anything older than 5 years is automatically erased.
Then why are there so many people indebted still? I asked. Surely if there is no more record, then the loans place is forced to just settle whether they get paid or not. Isn't that kind of like filing for bankruptcy?
It was designed to be that way until they invented cloud storage, Riggs said in a way that was a bit cloak and dagger.
Oh, yeah, I know about the cloud, I said with a shrug.
How do you know about the cloud? Riggs said, and his mouth popped open as he boggled first at Mama B, who was now sitting on an overturned milk crate, and then back at all of us.
The cloud is some seriously nefarious, oppressive technology invented by the CGA to keep us all shackled into slavery. Check this out. People report constantly that they never renewed their Quicken contracts, but they still get enrolled back into the loan program regardless because of the cloud. The cloud always remembers. Honestly, it sounds like fucking witchcraft. How can data be gone physically from one system and then appear again somewhere else as if it's just been floating around waiting to be pieced together again in some cloud like that kid in Willy Wonka that got zapped by the giant laser? Last time I checked, I didn't sign up for that crazy tunnel boat ride. Fuck that.
Relax, Riggsy baby.
Mama B purred and stroked her gold-sequined foot up Riggs's corduroy-clad calf.
Yeah, no one really understands the cloud, I said, and then frowned.
That's because the myth that it's a cloud is just a myth, when really it's just another database server that data can be uploaded to only wirelessly without zip drives or cables, Riggs said, as if he just proved God existed, and then he clicked his remote again.
The top right monitor zoomed in on the image and showed a corny infographic of a person sitting at home on their computer while an underground cartoon leech sucked out strings of binary code and stored it in its massive, bloated gut. I thought this was all common knowledge, but when I was about to ask him if he knew what Wi-Fi was, I stopped myself when it occurred to me that no, of course there was no such convenience in this corporate hell where things like free public Wi-Fi meant more freedom for the consumer and therefore bad for business.
You think there's a hidden server where Quicken Loans keeps all of its backed-up client files? I stated instead.
Yes, now you're getting it. He clicked the remote again, and the image of the 2D map with the Quicken Loans drop pin on the upper left monitor suddenly grew into a 3D image of the building in question.
Then a glowing green circle pulsed in the center of the semi-transparent building and descended down to the lower left monitor directly under it where the building's basement was ostensibly located.
My sources tell me the illegal backup servers exist in a basement, and hidden behind a door that requires an actual analog key instead of a biometric one like everything else these days.
And what is it you need Emma for? I asked, and leaned forward when I sensed we were about to get to the crux of the matter.
Yes, darling Emma, I'm getting there, Riggs said, and clicked his remote again.
The final monitor in the lower right zoomed in on what appeared to be the schematics for a server tower. It all looked like a foreign language to me, but basically I could tell from the triple flashing wingdings in the shape of lightning bolts what Emma's role might be. Riggs turned back to us with a wide grin.
The only way to take it down is to get someone on the inside that can corrupt the servers all at once. The first option is to persuade a biohacker to upload a kill virus, but this is risky and usually impossible because all of them are scared to break their contracts due to the repercussions involved. The second option is doable, but it requires someone to actually sign their life away so they can enroll into the biohacker program. This takes years to work their way through the ranks to even have a hope of gaining access to the illegal servers, not to mention having them undergo painful experimental genetic modifications so they can actually be a biohacker.
Man, most of us don't have that kind of time,
Mama B added as she shook out her long flaxen hair and checked her lacquered nails.
But with Emma, we can skip all that, and no one would have to make that awful sacrifice, you understand?
Riggs said, and his brown eyes were made even more wide and hopeful when he stared at me head-on through his magnifying bifocals.
All she needs to do is short out all the motherboards at once, and decades of future oppression vanishes.
I see what you're saying, but it's not really my choice, I said, and turned to the dark-haired beauty that was sitting on the lumpy pea-green couch between Acrasis and me. It's Emma's.
Oh, well, that is to say, oh my.
Emma rubbed the fingers of her right hand together and stared down at them as she tried to collect her thoughts after being put on the spot. Her eyebrows furrowed, and she took a breath before she looked Riggs in the eye.
These people with the illicit machines, they're hurting people?
Very much so,
Mama Bee said, and nodded along solemnly with Riggs.
Oh, Dave,
Emma said as she turned her big blue eyes on me.
I know the last place we left with a whole lot of trouble on our heels for interfering, but if I have a chance to help even one person, I'd like to try.
Ems, that's the whole reason I love you, I said, and kissed her pert little nose so the worry lines on her face would go away. If you want to help, then I'm on board.
And me as well,
Acrasis said with a nod and a blink.
I feel that I should help people from now on.
You really want to help us?
Riggs said, and his cigarette hung limp from his mouth again, as if he honestly didn't think his argument would work.
Yes, we do. But first, I think we need to negotiate,
Emma said in her prim and proper voice.
Name your price, Riggs said.
Solar panels, I blurted, like a kid asking what he wanted for Christmas. Materials to get a few solar stills and bottle towers started. Any seeds you'd be willing to part with, dried meat if you've got it, salt, vinegar, and any manuals or texts you might find beneficial to have on hand when starting our own homestead commune thing, but especially the solar panels.
Deal,
Riggs said without missing a beat or batting an eye. Well, wait, really? I said, and I was somehow unconvinced it would actually be that simple. This must really be important to you guys.
You only know half of it, my friend,
the Afro-punk said, and relit his slightly crumpled, hand-rolled cigarette.
This is going to end slavery for millions of people.
You think this is really going to work? I asked.
If it doesn't, then this way of life Magpie Mansion has been able to afford those who truly have no other option will eventually be crushed out like David under the corporate Goliaths in our midst, he said, wearily,
and pushed the bifocals up on his head so he could massage the bridge of his nose. I know a little something about that David guy, I said with a smirk. I also know that he wins in that particular story, and we will too. Now, tell us the plan, from start to finish. From there, Riggs rehashed the plan, only this time he went into more depth and even went so far as to outline the itinerary down to the minute. By the time we left the shipping container, well-versed in how tomorrow's events would play out, the sun was low in the sky. And I startled when I realized we had spent almost the entire day here.
Won't you stay for dinner?
Mama Bee insisted, as she escorted us back through the courtyard and into the main part of the mansion, where the members of the punk commune were preparing a meal and starting to unwind for the day. We really should be getting back to our other friends, actually. Right after I said this, a clattering bang rang out from the kitchen, and I looked over to see the sight of a guilty-looking gear rat as he picked up a wooden bowl full of greens.
I know that look,
someone shouted from across the big open room. I turned and saw that the voice belonged to Puck and her cotton-candy pink mohawk.
Rat, what'd you do?
What?
Rat said with wide, coal-rimmed eyes.
Me? I didn't. To even suggest that I would...
Out with it,
Puck said with a no-nonsense glare.
Oh, all right. I misplaced their spark plugs,
Rat said.
You what?
I shouted, while Puck rolled her eyes and said...
Classic.
It was a total accident, I swear,
he said, and raised his twitchy fingers. How do you accidentally take out spark plugs from someone's car? I asked, and crossed my arms over my chest.
Well, no, that part was on purpose,
the man shrugged and rubbed the back of his neck.
But I didn't mean to put them somewhere and then forget. I promise I'll find them, though, I swear.
So, I guess we are staying for dinner after all, I sighed.
You should probably all stay the night anyway, sugars, and then that way you'll all be here for tomorrow morning,
Mama Bee said.
Business hours are almost over, which means all of the major corporate roads out of Detroit will be closed. If you try to take the back roads the whole way, you'll run out of funds and have to get a tow by Quicken, where they'll try to get you to sign an indentured servitude contract the whole way to the impound.
I see how they do that, I said with an ugly scoff. That's cruel.
Very, my man,
the man named Scoob said, and draped himself between Emma and I like an old wrinkled curtain. With one hand, he brought around another joint and took a huge drag.
Do you think Fila, Floppy, and the crazy man will be okay without us?
Acrasis asked. I miss Fila, too. But I'm pretty sure her and Saul are getting along just fine, I said, and patted the slime girl's hand. Knowing Saul, he's probably trying to convince Fila to recreate 1 million years B.C. and having the time of his life. And Fila's probably giving him a run for his money.
Then it's settled.
Puck said, and sauntered closer to us.
You'll stay and experience what it's like to be a magpie.
Awesome, I said, and clapped my hands together. Do you guys need help with the food prep? What can we do? We're all very helpful individuals.
We should have another tellin'!
A punk with green spikes for hair and a dog collar piped up where he was snapping the ends off of a big basket of peas.
That's a fabulous idea,
Mama Bee purred.
Why don't you set it up, Constantine? And when you're done, please go to the cellar out back. This night also calls for wine.
Wine? We never have wine. Is it Christmas? A few people murmured until someone in the back finally spoke up.
What are we celebrating?
We are celebrating the fact that our new friends here are willing and able to help us topple one of Detroit's greatest evils.
Riggs' voice boomed out from where he entered through the dining room, and everyone else stopped chattering and stared at Acrasis, Emma, and me.
You're gonna take down the Quicken Loans sharks?
Puck finally said, and she stepped close enough I could see the gold flecks in her emerald green eyes. Her question ricocheted around the sudden silence as everyone honed in on the three of us, all with varying degrees of hopeful disbelief. It struck me in that moment how much it meant for these people to continue living this way of life without the constant threat hanging over their heads like an ominous storm cloud. That's why saying what I said next came so easy, because I meant it deep inside my bones. "We're going to try our damnedest, you can guarantee it," I told her. But I also made sure to address the room at large with as much surety and conviction as I possessed. A huge round of applause erupted through the crowd, and the three of us were jostled and jerked as everyone tried to pat us on the backs or shake our hands.
"Someone get the music! I got the wine!"
The spiky-haired dude named Constantine barged back into the kitchen, and from there it was a frenzy of activity that the three of us could only stand by and watch as every single magpie came together like a well-oiled machine. The group in the kitchen continued to chop, toss, and prepare the food while several others transformed the open space into a more intimate one separated from the kitchen and foyer. The two who searched us for barcodes on the backs of our necks, Misfit and X-Ray, rolled out a circular platform so that all of the rugs and pillows could then be arranged around it campfire style. Those who had just rushed off came pounding back down the stairs carrying a scuffed djembe, a violin, and a guitar that had definitely seen better days.
"Please, sugars, make yourselves comfortable,"
Mama said as she doled out strong-smelling red wine in mismatched plastic cups.
"Let my magpies take care of you."
We were then led over to a comfy patch on the floor and served wooden bowls of a salad that was made with everything but the kitchen sink, it looked like. It had things in it like quinoa and garbanzo beans, and when I brought a mouthful up to my lips and took a bite, it tasted nourishing and hearty, and I suddenly couldn't shovel it in fast enough. I couldn't believe we spent the whole day at the mansion already, and as the shadows lengthened across the floor with the setting sun, it was no wonder I was so hungry. I could tell Emma and Acrasis were starving too, because we all spent those blissful moments noshing away in silence. A small vibrating trill came from my jeans pocket just then, and I stopped mid-chew so I could pull out the goggles.
"What was that?"
Emma asked through a mouthful of food and then washed it down with some fruity wine. "These, for some reason," I said, and then put the nam shubs on my face.
"Hello, John, Eric, Smith. You've got mail."
Abby zoomed the image of something that looked like an envelope emoji to the center of my field of vision.
"Would you like to open it now?"
"It's a message from Saul," I exclaimed when I saw the name of the sender flashing at me above the envelope. Yes, open it." A video clip popped out and showed the image of my frazzle-haired pseudo-uncle, shirtless and covered in dark mud. I pressed the right bezel on the goggles' frames, and the message began to play.
"Hey, kiddo, since the sun is about ready to set, I'm assuming you and the others managed to get along with the magpies. At least I hope you did, because I realized after you left just how far that mansion place was, and you probably ran out of Monopoly money. Sorry about that. I don't really get out much."
He lifted a mud-caked hand and ran it through his riot of curly hair.
"But Fila wanted me to..."
Saul was suddenly pushed out of the way, and the camera was filled with Fila's fiery red mane and topaz-jeweled cat eyes, surrounded with mud, just like Saul's.
"Dave Meyer, you have not returned with our pack, so I trust you are doing something important. But you must hurry back, because Floppy is very depressed without you,"
she said and smiled softly.
"And I confess, loneliness is not a feeling I like remembering."
It's okay, though.
Saul broke in again, and his expression looked a little miffed at being shoved out of the frame of his own camera. But for the most part, he looked excited.
Phyla's teaching me how to make spears, and she taught me how to mix this certain type of moss with this clay. Apparently, it has all kinds of health benefits. But somehow, I didn't think it'll help me in the beauty department. Anyways, use that fancy contraption to drop us a line, will ya? Okay, over and out.
The message disappeared, and I couldn't help but snort.
What was it?
Emma asked as I confirmed the reply option with the right bezel. Sol and Phyla are doing a spa treatment, but they wanted to know our status, I explained, and watched how a small mini-screen appeared on the lower right corner of the GUI and showed me in frame as if I was about to take a selfie. Let's send them a message. I reclined back against the mountain of cushions and pulled Emma and Acrasis close to my sides with an arm flung over each of their shoulders as I started the reply message. Hey, you guys, I said with a broad grin. We met with the Magpies, and they're willing to help us out, but we got to do something for them first. We'll be taking advantage of their hospitality for the night, but as soon as we're able, all of us are coming back tomorrow. Miss you all. Over and out.
Everyone!
Constantine, with the green spike, said, as he clapped his hands and gestured toward the modest performance space, complete with a little stool and various handheld instruments surrounded by a ring of candles.
Let the tailing begin!
What proceeded to take place next was a weird combination of a poetry slam and open mic thing where several of the punks took turns on the ramshackle platform and either sang a song or recited some sort of spoken verse.
Oh, how lovely!
Emma enthused as someone with more piercings than I could count finished up with her beat poem about societal disenfranchisement or something.
I want to do one!
Before I knew what was happening, Emma was suddenly taking the stage with the scratched guitar, and she began to pluck out a simple tune that sounded just as modern as it did folksy. She was enchanting to watch as she bent and swayed with the music, and her brassy yet soulful contralto instantly hypnotized me, so much so the lyrics she was singing didn't register beyond something about coal mines and protesting, or something. Whatever the case, I'd never been into acoustic folksy stuff. But if Emma sang it in that smoked honey voice, I would even be into an endless loop of Baby Shark as long as it came from her raspberry-colored lips. As she finished on a rich, deep note in her surprisingly bluesy tone, I couldn't help but jump to my feet in a standing ovation along with the rest of the crowd. I ran up to her and helped her step over the ring of burning candles.
Where did that come from?
I asked her breathlessly, and I was caught off guard by how lovely she looked through the hazy candlelight, and I couldn't not kiss her on that talented mouth.
I agree. It was quite pleasing to listen to, Emma Newbold,
Acrasis said as she stood to my left.
I find myself surprised by my attraction to you. I am not sure if it is just your aesthetic appearance or the mind-altering vapors in the air, but I find myself wanting to touch you intimately while Dave touches both of us.
Oh, Razzie,
Emma said huskily, and I watched her pupils dilate to wide discs as her cheeks filled with color.
I think you're beautiful, too. I'm glad you joined our little family.
I blinked and looked between my two girlfriends as they both leaned in at the same time and explored each other's mouths in a sinful kiss that had me rock hard so fast I felt lightheaded.
There are rooms upstairs for you.
A voice came up from behind me, and I jumped slightly when I remembered the universe consisted of more than just the two hot women making out in front of me.
Huh?
I said, and half turned my head to the sight of Mama B's magnificent bouffant and smirking crimson lips.
No one will think anything if you retire early,
she said, and glanced pointedly down at me and the obvious erection no doubt pushing against my zipper. A small part of me was embarrassed, but honestly, I was too horny to really care right at this moment, as I grabbed both my girlfriend's hands and made a beeline for the staircase and piled us into the first available room I came across with a bed.
Oh, David,
Emma said as I snatched her to me close, untied her prim bun, and dipped her low to the ground before I kissed her wine-stained mouth. Then I brought us both back up and turned toward Acrasis and pulled her in for a similar scorching kiss.
God, I think I got a contact high from all the stoners too, Raz, I said,
through a suddenly elated giggle as I brushed the waterfall of her silky burgundy hair over her shoulder.
You can change into what you're most comfortable in, sweetheart.
The slime girl smiled as she shimmered and dropped her glamour, so that her skin was that pretty iridescent green-purple and was smooth and flexible like a water balloon.
Razzie, oh, you are so gorgeous like this.
Emma sighed and trailed her delicate fingers down Acrasis's face, across the rainbow ridge of her collarbone, and then down her arm.
You are pleasing to look at, too, Emma Newbold,
Acrasis said and ran her thin soap-bubble fingers through Emma's midnight hair.
I wish to learn from you.
What would you like to learn?
She asked. Then, with a smile that could almost be called shy, Acrasis took both Emma's hand and my hand and lightly squeezed.
I wish to learn how a human woman makes love,
she said, and glanced between us with her shifting jeweled eyes. Emma then looked at me with surprise, and I simply shrugged and held out my unoccupied hand for her to take, so the three of us made a complete circuit. Well, I'm amenable to that, I said, as I tugged the dark-haired beauty closer to me and nosed my way behind her ear.
Oh, yes, I am too.
Emma shuddered and tilted her head to the left so I could have access to the tender skin under her jaw. Her breath hitched sharply, and then she moaned as I worried that skin between my teeth.
What does it feel like?
Acrasis whispered as she came up behind Emma and moved the other woman's heavy fall of hair out of the way of my questing mouth.
It feels like tingles.
Emma hissed and grabbed a handful of my curly black hair as I switched sides.
Tingles all over my skin.
Let's get more comfortable, I murmured, as I unbuttoned her blouse. And a thrill of arousal spiked through me at the way she whimpered when I thumbed her left nipple through her brassiere until I could feel it stiffen.
That makes the tingles feel like sharks,
Emma said, and she slipped the rest of the way out of her blouse.
You too, Dave Meyer,
Raz said, and then she and Emma both helped undress me all the way down to my socks. The disrobing of my person was more clinical than it was sexy, but if these two were as wound up as I was, nobody had patience for a drawn-out striptease.
Your manhood is also most pleasing to me,
Acrasis said, then curled her slightly cool fingers around my burning shaft, and I groaned deep inside my chest as she gave me a small stroke.
It gave me such pleasure when it poured its sperm into me.
He is a fine specimen, isn't he, Razzie?
Emma breathed and pressed her body against my side so she could tangle her fingers into my dark chest hair.
And he's all ours, along with all of his sperm.
Then Emma sank to her knees in front of me, placed one of my hands into her ebony hair, and then took over for Raz's stroking with her mouth. Oh, God, baby, I grunted as Emma's rose petal lip slowly enveloped the head of my cock. She swirled her tongue once around my weeping slit, and my knees nearly buckled with how good that felt. Raz came up behind me and molded her lithe form against my back, which helped stabilize me and kept me from falling onto my face as Emma then jumped into her blowjob like she was playing for keeps. She was still a little inexperienced with her technique, but she more than made up for it in enthusiasm and improvisation. Fuck! I shouted when one of her fingers stroked me right under my balls as she gave a mighty suck on my shaft with her wet mouth. And the ribbon of drool that fell from the corner of her lips was obscene enough I almost came on the spot. Christ! Oh, if you keep that up, we'll spoil the finale. Emma slowly pulled off my cock, and I brought her to her feet so I could devour her in a kiss as I tore off the rest of her clothes. As always, I just had to stand there and stare for a second at the vision of perfection before me. Emma's pale skin glowed like the moon in the candlelight from the numerous candelabras that filled in for the lack of the manor's electricity. My eyes raked her from head to toe, and she slowly brought her long hair over her shoulder to play with as my gaze tried to burn a trail down her pretty throat, over the peaks of her perfect breasts, and down the dark valley of shadow between her silken legs. "Let's all get on the bed," I suggested, and I led both beautiful women to the old but sturdy-looking four-poster set up in the corner. "Raz, let me show you how a human man makes love to a human woman." Acrasis nodded almost eagerly and took her place at the top of the bed by the headboard. She then arranged her naked and featureless body against the pillows and held her arms out.
Come here, Emma.
Raz said.
I wish to telepathically share your experience. Through our connection, I can feel all the pleasure that Dave gives you.
Emma crawled across the mattress and then rested with her back to Acrasis's chest. She shuddered lightly when Raz's arms ran up the sides of her waist and explored the hills of the other woman's pert breasts.
Oh, Razzy, your hands feel so good,
she moaned, and my dick twitched sharply upward. Before Emma or I could get lost in the slime girl's ministrations, she opened her arms and beckoned me forward.
Come to me, my love.
I all but fell into her warm embrace as I tried to press every inch of our naked skin together. God, baby, I said, and then I suckled one of her pebbled nipples into my mouth.
Ah!
Emma yelped, and suddenly Acrasis's cool fingers tangled into my curls, and she gave a sharp yank. I looked up at Raz with a concerned frown. Are you okay, sweetheart?
I am fine,
she stammered, and I almost didn't believe her because she never stumbled over her words, but she gave me an encouraging nod.
Please. Continue to pleasure, Emma Newbold.
You got it, I smirked, and then alternated between hot open-mouth kisses and biting hickeys as I trailed my way down Emma's chest and flat belly until I was level with my prize. With gentle hands, I opened Emma's thighs, and her legs fell open like a blooming orchid. She flexed her hips unconsciously, and her eyes smoldered into mine like braziers.
Please, make me feel good, Dave,
she moaned, and I needed no further permission than that. So I scooped my arms under the cradle of her hips and lowered my mouth to the dark thatch between her legs.
Oh,
Acrasis hissed out as I brushed my tongue tentatively over Emma's emerging clit. You like that? I asked them both, and was met with dual nods. I smirked again, and then I dove back in for a proper taste. Emma shrieked, as I circled that little knot of pleasure hidden in the folds of her pussy lips. She gushed out a bit of her arousal onto my tongue, and the musky, tangy flavor made me grind my cock into the mattress for a bit of relief to my aching erection. As much as I wanted to take her roughly like my baser caveman desires demanded, I wanted to make her, them, see stars first. With one hand, I gently held open her soft folds so I could get my tongue to go a little bit deeper where her honeyed nectar was the strongest, and I just managed to grab a hold of her hips as she nearly jackknifed upright from the sensation.
Oh, my love!
She wailed, just as she started to shake and thrash through her first orgasm. I removed my head to prevent my skull from being crushed between her surprisingly strong thighs like a walnut. But I replaced my tongue with my calloused gamer's thumb and rubbed gentle circles over her most sensitive area as she rode that wave for as long as possible.
Is this a human female orgasm?
Raz said as she rolled along with Emma's climax. The slime girl's eyes always looked iridescent, but now they looked a little glossy with dopamine where she stared at me from behind Emma's dark head.
It felt so much better than what Dave experienced.
Tiresias was right then, I laughed. Emma sighed.
That's another thing I love about Dave. He knows all about the antiquity lore, beauty and brains, and a nice penis.
Just you wait, babe, I grinned, and then flowed up Emma's body so I could slowly grind our pelvises together. I cupped her alabaster cheek splattered with hectic flush and kissed her lips as I lined the tip of my cock up with her hot opening. You ready?
Please, Dave. I need to feel you inside of me.
Emma threw a leg up and over one of my hips and gave a slight pull. I grinned and nipped her bottom lip, and then I leaned up so I could kiss Raz on the mouth, too. Then, with a slow, undulating thrust, I slid myself home in one silken movement. Fuck, honey, oh, you feel so good, I nearly growled, and I only allowed my hips to snap once before I beat back the urge to just pound her into the mattress. I wanted this to be good for her, even if it took all night. But the wily little jaguar wasn't having the nice and slow approach, apparently.
because she moaned and locked her other leg around my waist so I could slide even deeper into her hot tunnel.
Make love to me, Dave. Take me so I'll feel you lingering for long after.
Her words were like the spark that lit the fuse, and without further ado, I drove into her like a man on a mission to find the new world.
Yes!
She shouted and thrashed her head to the side.
I can feel you too, Dave.
Raz said, and her voice trembled with tension. Her cool palm flowed through my curls and then down my back as I continued to pump away.
I can feel something. It's so good. Right there!
Emma gasped when I shifted a little lower on my knees, and I must have hit the sweet spot because Emma contracted around me, and I could start to feel the atmosphere change as static electricity built up around the three of us. The pricking sensation on my skin and scalp added to the intense feeling of pleasure drawing my balls high and tight. I was right on the cusp, but I needed her to come first. Come on, Emmers, I groaned as I buried my cock over and over again in her wet pussy. Come for me. Come for both of us, beauty. I reached out and cupped Raz's face and groaned again when the slime girl sucked my fingers into her satiny mouth.
Yes!
Emma screamed and arched her back as her climax exploded through her, and she discharged a mild surge of energy that had my hair frizzing out from my head, and Raz rippling from the force. Every time her pussy contracted, a zing of that same energy went through my throbbing shaft. The feeling was what made me go off like a fucking rocket off its launch pad, and I began shooting inside her like a fire hydrant that just got run over by a tank.
Yes, fill me up.
Emma hissed, and her sharp fingernails bit into my ass cheeks as she pulled me in as deep as I could go, as we all rode the ocean of our shared ecstasy. Fuck, I said, and collapsed on top of both of them as the peak of my orgasm finally ebbed. Raz, you all right under there? There was a silence, and I raised my head to look at the slime girl over Emma's shoulder. She had her eyes closed, and I was startled to see a single tear fall down her shimmering cheek.
Razzie?
Emma coaxed as she took in the sight of the distressed woman.
What's wrong, darling? Nothing is wrong. How could it be?
Acrasis whispered through her hitching breaths. She finally opened her eyes and looked between the two of us. Then she smiled a true, bright smile, unlike any of the shy small ones she'd given me before.
Everything is well. Everything is beautiful. I'm glad you came to my world, Dave Meyer. I'm so glad we are together.
I gazed between my beautiful girlfriends as a black wave of exhaustion swept through me. I kissed them each for a while as I softened inside of Emma and then gently pulled out. This day was draining in more ways than one, but I made sure that I wasn't too tired to get up and blow all the candles out before we fell asleep with the fire hazard. When I came back to crawl under the covers, I was delighted to find that Acrasis flattened out somewhat so she could wrap both of us up like a burrito sandwich, and the sensation of holding Emma while also being held by Raz was a comforting one considering how likely dangerous the events of tomorrow would be. I could only hope they weren't too dangerous, though, because I was looking forward to getting my Mission Impossible on.